This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
What's your Dunedin origin story? Today's guest grew up at Larnach Castle, worked in Dunedin tourism, and is now our mayor. And I can't imagine a more iconic Dunedin story than that. Sophie Barker is here today to reveal a bit about what goes on behind the scenes and under the robes. Welcome to Tell Me Moya, where the chats are candid, the laughs are loud, and nothing is off limits. I'm Harriet Moya, and each episode I'm sitting down with brilliant women, or people who identify as women, for no filter and no nonsense chats about, well, pretty much anything. Real, relatable, and at times raucous, Tell Me Moya dives right into the conversations we want to have but don't have time for, and the ones we don't want to have but we know we should. Strap in. Are you ready for Tell Me Moya? Season 1 of Tell Me Moya kicks off quite simply with a collection of conversations with eight interesting women that I know. And Dunedin's current mayor, Sophie Barker, is no exception. A passionate Dunedinite, Sophie Barker spent her childhood growing up in Dunedin's Larnach Castle, and she studied and worked in marketing and tourism before being elected as a councillor to the Dunedin City Council in 2019. Welcome, Sophie. Thank you for being here.
Kia ora. Very pleased to be here.
It is lovely that you've made a bit of time in your extraordinarily hectic schedule to chat with me on Tell Me Moya. I really appreciate it. So I imagine it has been another huge week of policy and politics for you. And hopefully this will be a nice little welcome, a bit of respite from the chaos. So here you are, the leader of our city. And I'm starting all of my interviews with this first season of Tell Me Moya by asking the women if they think that women can have it all. So I ask you, our mayor, Sophie Barker, do you think women can have it all?
Well, it depends what you mean by all. I guess there's little bits of stuff. Very challenging balancing, because I guess we've got our work life, we've got our family life, we've got perhaps we might like to have a bit of fun. I think fun's missing from my life.
That was one of my questions for later on, like, do you have time for fun?
Yeah. And I think I grew up in the 80s at school, and they had the poster on the wall, girls can do anything, and it seemed to almost be girls can do everything. And I actually think to get balance in your life, sometimes you need to make choices.
Absolutely. And that idea of choice keeps coming back, actually, with everyone that I've interviewed about this particular question. It's that idea that perhaps having it all actually means just having choices and to be able to choose what it is you want to prioritise.
And it's what does all mean.
Yeah.
You know, does all mean for me maybe a little bit more time with my kittens at home.
Yeah, with your kittens. You've got kittens.
Well, they're a year old, but they're still kittens.
They're still your babies, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think there aren't enough hours in the day to be able to do it all. Somebody said something once, I saw something recently where they were like, 8 hours of sleeping, 8 hours of work, and 8 hours to do what you want with. And I was like, well, this person
cleaning
obviously doesn't have children. They obviously don't have a house to maintain. They obviously don't have pets to walk or feed or a car to run. Like, what a delusional construct. Totally. So before you were on the city council and all of that, and even before your time working in marketing and tourism, did you always sort of feel like council was something that you wanted to do?
No. Well, I didn't really, I certainly didn't want to end up in politics.
Oops. And here we are.
It's not something that I really thought about back in the, maybe the 90s. A group approached me to go on council, and I'm like, why would I do that? And then I guess I ended up here through wanting to make some, hopefully, systemic change. In the end, the things that I grew to be annoyed about, I thought there's one way to try and change them, and that's to go on council. So it's not, you know, I love tourism. That's where my heart really is. But sometimes you need a girl to get in and sort things out.
Amen. Amen to that. So did you studied marketing and tourism at uni?
No, I actually did economics.
Okay.
Yeah. I did a little bit of marketing, but they required you to do statistics.
Right.
To go into stage two. So I did half a unit of stage two, and then I'm like, nah. And economics is the thing I ended up doing because I wasn't a good student. It was the 80s.
Oh, look, I don't think
I was
anyone
the cook,
was.
The gardens, yeah, right. The gurry.
I think that is actually the definition of a good student, really, Sophie, is
balance.
A Dunedin student being at the cook and the gardens. That's like iconic. So, yes, you mentioned that what drew you maybe to running for council in the first place was this idea that there were some things that were bothering you. And
yeah, well, I'm a person that likes to, I guess, see change and see things tidied up and sorted out. And I'd watched from outside as a tourism operator. I've been inside for 7 years at one stage inside the council and worked in the economic development unit.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you dipped your toes into council.
Yeah,
prior.
Yeah. So I'd been a staff member and I'd been there when we'd put together the economic development strategy and the visitor strategy and made sure that those happened. And then just went to work with the Albatross and the Penguins, and then looking back and just going, this is so frustrating. These strategies and plans cost so much money and were really good and they're not getting executed, because I want our city to be amazing. But if you have all these plans, you've got all these partnerships and you're not doing a darn thing about them, need to get sorted out.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're like, okay, this is it. I'm gonna put my hand up. And so once you were in council, was leadership in council something that you had your eye on from the beginning, or
that
just something that's kind
of evolved? No, because I'm just like a bit of an introvert. So, but I think there's that real practical Presbyterian side, and you just hope someone needs to get in sorted out. So after the first 3 years, I wasn't going to come back because it's heinous, you know, the political sphere.
Yeah.
And then my daughter said to me, oh, if you don't do it, I'll be doing it in 30 years. So I knew that I had the ability to stand up and be part of it. So I slid into final base and put my, nomination, and it's before 12 o'clock on
yeah,
the final
right.
day.
This is for mayor. This is for in the last election.
Oh, no, so this is 2022.
Oh, no, okay.
So I wasn't going to come back after the first 3 years.
Yes, gotcha, sorry.
And then the ODT rated me as the highest performing person. That was after I put it in, and then I was the highest polling councillor as well by 1,000 votes. So it was
right,
pretty amazing.
Pretty convincing.
Yeah. And I kind of felt like nobody really noticed what I was doing, but actually
Turns out they did. That's really affirming. Mm. It must have instilled you with a bit of confidence and a bit like, maybe I am on the right track and doing the right thing.
And then the next time when I stood for mayor was people just kept asking me, and I think I'm like, things need to be sorted out. I don't think I can do it.
Yeah.
So that's why I stood again to make change. And
that's see this yeah. last time.
Yes. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
where you
yeah.
were voted in.
Yes, indeed.
As mayor, which is so fabulous. It was a narrow margin, though. Were you like?
Oh, in the end, it was 5%.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So,
so
it was a narrow margin on the Saturday.
Yeah.
The first count, because they still had 25% of the votes to count. Naughty Dunedin voting late. Stressful.
Oh, yeah. Must be agony for you.
Yeah, well, it was really annoying because at one stage on the Sunday night, I was like, I'm just going to go to bed now. I'm really tired and I'm sick of waiting.
Yeah.
And they were like, do you really want to read whether you won or not in the paper the next day? Because they just get, we've got a few more to count. It's coming. And
but
yeah.
In the end, 5% is actually quite convincing.
Indeed.
So that's fabulous. And I am, for one, very happy that you are our mayor. So was there a particular thing that sort of, you mentioned before that when you went for that second term on council, your daughter had said to you that if you don't run in 30 years, it'll have to be her. Mm. And you were like, oh, God, no, it's so terrible. I would not wish that on my beautiful daughter. Was there something in particular that pushed you over the line to make you decide to run for mayor? Was there a particular
issue? Yeah, I think it's just about trying to create a city that my daughter, and that's a selfish viewpoint, but for all young people, that they can find a future in for themselves.
Yeah.
You know, when we've all got children who are looking to leave the city to get jobs, and if we can't create an amazing place to live that's got great jobs, great lifestyle, the ability to go to the beach in 10 minutes, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, what are we leaving our children? So I think that was it in the end.
Totally. Mm. Oh, well, it's fabulous that you put yourself forward and here you are. Now, you are only the second woman to be mayor here in Dunedin after Sookie Turner. And do you think, Do you think that you are treated differently as a mayor because you are a woman?
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah. Actually, when I got the mayoral chain, I'm looking at all the names on it, and it was so old, from the early 1900s. And I'm like, where's Suki? And she was on the spear chain. So I had her link moved, her and Peter Chin's link moved to the front of my chain.
Absolutely.
Because I'm like, nobody put Suki in a corner.
No.
You know, so I moved around. But I do get... somebody who...
You said she was on a spear chain, so yeah. She wasn't actually even on the...
On the main chain. So anyway, I had that changed.
Fabulous, thank
That's
you.
The only change I made.
Appreciate
but,
that.
You know, that was a bit weird. I have had feedback that the media used to ask the male mayors what their opinion was, and then they ask me how I'm feeling. And then I have...
Have you noticed that?
Oh, my gosh. It's... When you've got staff telling you that have been at council for decades that this is the worst they've ever seen out, the attacks on the mayor and the carry-on in the media and online, you know, it's pretty bad.
It's been pretty grim, very punishing. Yeah. And you have to wonder, is that because she's a woman?
Yep. Yeah, well, that's the feedback that I get, and that's what we hear from all the women mayors. And when you've got your male colleagues observing it as well,
yeah,
you know, it is a real thing. Got some good advice from Ben Bell. Went to mayor's school, and Ben was just don't read the comments. That's where your because he, you know, he was the youngest mayor. That's where your soul goes to die. So I try to keep off social media as much as I can because it is such an ugly cesspool of trolls.
Oh, it's so traumatic. Yeah. I mean, I like every now and then might comment on something and then mistakenly go and have a look at the comments on my comment. And it's like, you have to have such a thick skin to be able to withstand that sort of
vitriol. I know, it must have been bad yesterday because people were sending me messages with hugs on and coming up and giving me hugs.
Oh, my God,
hugs in the street.
That's how you know it's bad.
That's how I know it's bad, because they're like, you need a hug.
Oh.
And then I was buying some wine at the supermarket and someone said, I think you need a bigger bottle.
Oh, Sophie. But are you still not tempted to have a look? No, that must make you not want to look.
No, I've got things to do. Yeah. I've got work to do at council, so why would I waste my time looking at that when I've got a huge long list of changes and work that needs to be done.
Yeah, you're so right. Oh, that's so awesome.
It's just distracting otherwise.
So do you think you think there are definitely still barriers for women in politics?
Unfortunately, yes. We last training we had 6 women on council. Now we've only got 5.
Yeah.
And then it's would you stand when you see the way that women are treated? You know, let Jacinda Ardern start. But women in politics, would you stand and would you put yourself and your family through that? Because my daughter reads those comments and knows she shouldn't. She thinks some of them are quite funny. But it's not okay. It's disgusting,
to
attack someone and then their family also. Like my mother, who's 84, gets that, you know, people tell her about it and I wish they wouldn't.
And do you think, as you said, I think the attacks towards women in those settings are more personal, aren't they?
Oh,
sometimes it's even stuff about the way you look
was one I mistakenly read.
Oh,
and then
God.
I'm like, stop it. They're horrible, horrible things, but I know they must be bad because everyone keeps sending me lovely things.
So the strategy of just not looking is one of the tools that you've got in your toolbox, but what else are you doing to protect yourself and look after yourself in that setting?
In the social media stuff, I'm on my page, anyone that writes rubbish on it, block, because that's my area and I'm not going to put up with that. And then, you know,
it's
get out
page,
and about a lot.
You do.
Always at things. And that's what fills my soul, is all of the amazing events and all the amazing people, because on the social media or commenting on the ODT stuff, you know, why are they at home?
Why aren't they at
the amazing events, meeting all of the wonderful people in the city?
Yeah,
and that's what fills me up. That's why I remember why I do what I do, because I have so much support out there.
Have you ever had sort of aggressive encounters in real life? Ooh.
Yeah, well, when we were electioneering, what was it, you effing loser?
Oh, nice.
And then someone cycled past and was busy swearing at me. And then I actually did get bashed into in the street and got whiplash during the election time. It was just awful. I got such a fright that I thought I was going to throw up. But we were filming and you just like suck it up and move on. But at the end of the day, I was just shaking from the shock of being assaulted in the street. It was horrible.
That is horrific. Was there any consequence for that?
No, well, I think we tried to get someone to look at the cameras, but it was just, I just went into shock. Then I had someone else, I was in the octagon doing something and someone just would not let go of me. A lucky member of the public just saw that I was in trouble and came and intervened. But I'm just short.
Yeah, do you feel unsafe?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I should have thought through this better. And that's part of your strategies is like, where's the exit?
So this is part of Mayor School?
No, well, the Mayor School does talk about that because it's a lot worse in the North Island. I'm just throwing some wood to touch.
Yeah.
But it is starting to come down where people feel quite emboldened. So it's, it's hard, but, you know, you do it because you love your city.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Oh, well, far out. Thank you for putting yourself on the line.
I get a lot of hugs, though.
Yes, good, yeah. Good. I'm glad. So you must sort of, there must be pinch me moments, too, where you're like, sit there at home with your cup of tea and your kittens, and you're like, holy heck.
I should be covered in bruises this week.
Yeah.
Oh, the mere stuff. Yeah, sometimes there are. It took a wee while to
Let it sink in
because it just, it was Sunday night and they're like, you're the mayor, and then Monday you've done two radio interviews by 8 a.m. and you're just going, and then there's just all this stuff coming at you. So quite surreal. And then, you know, there's been some interesting behaviour in council in the last wee while, so I would be covered in bruises if I had pinch me moments. I'm going,
yeah.
Am I living in an alternate universe?
Is this for real? Yeah. We won't go into all of that.
No.
I know,
we don't need to give it any oxygen.
That's right. But you must, many of you must be sitting there just going, is this real?
Well, yeah, we've got important stuff to do.
That's what, sort of, from a very kind of outsider looking in, kind of not knowing a lot about it, that's my thought is all the time, is like, why are we spending time on this?
Why are we wasting time on it when we have got work to do?
Absolutely. So what bit of advice then would you give to women who want to run for council but maybe.
Yeah, I think you just need to have a good group of people around you. I think that's the thing that's saved me is all of the people, both men and women, well, everyone and the kittens, who support you and keep you sane and send you nice messages. And this week, you know, someone brought me around some chocolate and some fruit and I've had flowers sent to me, bottles of wine, all of that kind because people realise that it's a bit crap. So I think it's having the people around you and finding strength in those people that support you that makes the difference, and you really, really need that, because if you became isolated, you might go down the hole.
You sort of need that stabilising influence, don't you? Yeah, and some of the positive coming in.
Yeah, and then the self-belief, I think, because it's easy as women, I think, you know, they talk about, oh, there's a job there, and you go, oh, I can't do one thing.
So
you don't apply.
Yes, I read that too, the idea that women see a job description, they look at the one thing they can't do, so then don't apply for the job. But the men look at the whole list, and it's the one thing they can do on the list, and they go, oh, I'll go for that, I'd be a good fit for that, even though they don't know how to do.
Well, you just need to have some self-realisation. I go, actually, those are things that I'm not good at, let's find someone. And I'm so lucky to have Cherry as deputy mayor. You know, it's a really good balance. And as I said, I trust her implicitly. We don't
she's
vote
very experienced.
Together.
Yeah.
You know, we'll vote against, but we have respect for each other and just get on and do the stuff that needs to
get done.
Get the job done. Yeah, imagine
that's
what
we want. So I was going to ask you about imposter syndrome, actually, but you said sort of having that self-belief. Do you sometimes?
Oh, I totally had imposter syndrome. You're standing there in the mayor's robes with the great big weight of the chain around you, just going, oh, God, everyone's looking at me.
What the hell has just happened? How did I get here?
Citizenship ceremony. I'm going, I'm really hot. Imagine if I faint in front of everyone. And then sometimes I'm like, oh, what would the mayor do? Because I'm like, I'm quite fond of my sneakers. And I'm like, I need to put the mayor's shoes on because people have an expectation of the mayor and what they look like and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can be a bit scruffy around the edges. So.
Well, with your hectic schedule, I think it's a wonder that you even have the time to shower most days, Sophie. Like,
wow, I was lucky this morning because the power was out till 4 a.m.
Oh, from the wind.
Yeah, yeah.
So
Bay Area. So it went off at 10 and they said it'd be back on at 12, and then I woke up at 3 and I'm like, What am I going to do? Power. I have to be somewhere at 6:45 a.m.
Your day started at 6:45?
Yeah. We had a blessing for the ORC building, which was just beautiful.
Yeah.
Lovely to stand out with a little bit of gentle mist while you waited outside.
Oh, well, there's one way to wake yourself up.
Indeed.
And if you missed your shower, you could
have
just
gone here. Yeah, but luckily the water came back, or the light came back on, so my lipstick was even.
So surround yourself with good people. Mm. That sounds like good advice in all aspects of life, really. And do you think, like, if you had to sort of describe your leadership style, maybe what you thought it was, or would you say that it is evolving now that you're in office?
Oh, absolutely, because I think that, I've always been incredibly self-reliant.
Yeah.
Because I've had to be through life, and I think that it's learning to trust others to do what they say they will do. And also I try to be inclusive and equitable, because previously mayors used to decide who chairs were and pay the chairs more. So I tried to pay everyone equally.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, well, all councillors are elected equally. Why is it up to the mayor to choose favourites and pay them more?
Okay.
You know, so I tried to do the portfolio system, pay everyone the same, because I really didn't like that the mayor had the power to decide what people
got paid.
It just didn't sit right for me.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. So I was interested in that. So why you to change the governance strategy from being like a committee to being
there was like seven committees. It was just too many meetings, too much wasting of time, because I am not into sitting around reading lots of reports.
Yeah.
We want to get stuff done. And if we have more council meetings, because that's where we make the real decisions, then we can do that. And also I wanted each councillor to have a win. So when I got them in the first couple of days and talked to them, I'm like, well, what areas are you actually interested in? And then created portfolios around those areas to give them something to be interested in, something to work on. So it's a new system and they're getting used to it. But I said I'd review it in a year, and I will around October. And even actually with the by-election, I think I'll review
it. Do you think it's going?
Well, I miss Jules. I'm, just still so cut up about his passing. And then the by-election, I knew it would be 2 months of rubbish, but it's worse than I expected.
Yes.
Because they're targeting me. Where's the, I'm going to talk about the policies, I'm going to talk about the good change and the positive things that I'm going to do for the city. It's just slagging off so much of the time.
And
the people that are standing for the by-election.
Yeah.
And slagging everyone off. And I'm like, really? You're going to have to sit around the table.
I
want good, strong, sensible people who can help us move forward.
People will show you their true colours, won't they?
Well, we're seeing that, aren't we?
Interesting. And you're quite right. Like, these are then, it's quite short-sighted in the sense that these are potentially the people you're going to have to work alongside if you are voted in.
Yeah.
And you've already, creating, I mean, I haven't really done anything particularly in leadership for a long time, but that sort of, I can speak to my boss, actually, who I just work in a hospital a couple of days a week at Buster Greens. And in terms of creating a culture like that, it starts at the top, and that has filtered down so beautifully from this lovely, gentle, kind, inclusive boss. But it did take a while for the weeds to sort of, I think that you can't expect that to happen immediately, but
and
hopefully
I
in time.
I see myself as unequal with everyone.
Yeah.
And you have to set the tone. And I guess I worked in hospital as well, and you were always one of the team. Even though you're the boss, you're always one of the team, and I always took on the worst jobs. So when we had student functions at the castle, I would clean the toilets afterwards.
Oh, that's so funny, because the other day at work, I was doing the dishes, and someone was like, Harriet, someone's done a terrible explosive poo. Can you please? I was like, I'll clean it up. They were like, because you're a mum. Can you do it?
I used to do all that stuff, strong stomach, but also that I wouldn't expect the team to do anything that I wouldn't do.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, and then it's about building respect and teamwork and trust and all those kind of things. So it's very challenging when you're with a team you didn't pick that get elected, and it's political and it's challenging, but I try to treat everyone with respect, give everyone a chance to speak up and to show their their abilities and their worth, because that's how they earn a place on the team.
Yeah, and I also love that you, as you said, you wanted to give everyone a win, and so going to them and talking about what they'd be interested in heading was a really cool idea. We're just going to have a little word from our sponsors.
Looking to make your next property move in Dunedin? Call the team that lives and breathes property. At NZ Property Solutions, we're 100% locally owned, packed with worldwide property experience, bold ideas, and serious property market know-how. We're passionate, connected, and yes, we love a good laugh too. Ready for a cracking result? Call the team at NZ Property Solutions today and let's get you moving. 0800 22 9655.
So I'm in the studio today with Sophie Barker, the Mayor of Dunedin, who's taken some time out of her very busy schedule to come and chat on Tell Me More. And I'm so grateful to have you here, Sophie. We've just been talking about the political arena and the team that you are working with, etc., at the moment. And I don't want to dwell on that for too much longer, but I did want to ask kind of in a broader way, not necessarily just in politics, but what you think some of the main issues are for women in general in Dunedin.
I think it's always that glass ceiling thing, and we see that especially around governance. I always used to count the number of women in rooms that I was in at management or at governance level, and that's an issue, because I think it's an issue for us. I do talk to my daughter about this, about women's rights, as they can be eroded slowly, and you won't notice necessarily.
Sure.
So that's part of the visible woman role models, and part of what why I stood for mayor was to be a good role model to all of the women out there to go, you can do this.
Fabulous.
You know, maybe it sucks a little bit, but
but
it is possible. Yeah. I think that's really important, and I think that there's safety issues as well. I mean, anyone that walks through the octagon as a woman, when there's been a bit of drinking going on, I think that's a thing.
Big issue. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think what my daughter would tell me of the issues as well. It's interesting to think about the young person's perspective. And then we do have an ageing population, women living longer than men, so we do have some issues around growing homelessness as well.
We definitely do.
Yeah, in our own social housing, which tends to be more for older women, and so there's those.
Yeah, there
few
are
things.
Some statistics that will show that women are significantly less off financially by the time it comes.
Oh, and that's part of that stuff is women getting paid less than
for
men.
A start. Yeah, exactly.
The gap. Yeah, so that's a big issue
plus
as well.
Plus the years that they take off raising families, etc., etc.
All of that stuff. As you asked earlier, trying to have it all.
Yeah.
I think that's a real challenge. And I was a solo parent as well. For all my daughters, were still am a solo parent.
Yes, you are.
With the kittens. and that's been a challenge, because I don't want to be judged on that. Well, maybe it's just being judged in a good way, but people have certain perceptions, and I think that's hard as well.
Yeah, totally. So I definitely can relate as a solo mum myself, and I take my hat off to you for doing that, because I know that it's
I'd be the first single solo mum mayor around.
I reckon you might be if we should do some research.
Yes.
But I would say
first one in Dunedin, that's for sure. Definitely, I know that.
Definitely. Maybe even the South Island and beyond. But you do have a lovely daughter. She's a young adult now at uni, is she? Or?
Yeah, doing law and economics.
Amazing.
Yeah. So oh, she works so hard.
Do you think that she will move into politics in some way?
Oh, I wouldn't think so. No, I don't know.
Law.
She's quite fascinated by it, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
Because sometimes she'd be messaging me, nice dress, mum, or nice colour. I'm like, are you watching council meetings again?
Oh my gosh, so she'll actually watch.
Well, she watched them all through COVID, because of course we were all working from home.
Yes.
So she was just fascinated by what happened when the mics went off and the live thing went off, because she gets to see all of these people. She gets to see all the councillors, warts and all.
Yeah, I bet.
So that's why she's quite interested.
Oh, shoot.
But some of the young people
are. Characters in her life. Yeah.
So, her friends are students. They're actually all interested in council, which is great, because we make some big decisions, probably stuff that affects them more than government decisions, affects their everyday lives. So really great that they're interested. I want them to vote.
Yes, you know? They must vote.
They must
especially
vote
this
and
year.
They should
we need
stand
them to vote more than ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there is a youth council, isn't there?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, what's the criteria for that? Because I know one
Being
of my
young?
Daughters is interested. Yeah.
I think you have to be... Now, we've got some year 10s on it, so
year 10's like 14, 15?
Yeah, so I'm up to year 13, I'm in a 7th form, I think.
Oh, no, that's
so
I relate to 7th form, don't worry, yeah.
And I think they just have to put themselves forward or get voted on. I'm not 100% sure, but it's just fantastic because we need to hear from the youth in our city because they don't have a voice around the table. I mean, I'm there, 60, as someone's mum, and I know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I think that young people, but who's there as the youth voice? Who's thinking about the city that they live in through
and that
their
they
eyes?
The decisions that are being made now that are going to very much affect their future in the city. Do they have a voice? Like, are they there regularly? Or
the
what?
Youth council come and talk to us. So we're invited to the hui, which they have, I think it's every month or every 6 weeks, not 100% sure. And then they come and present to council as well. Okay. I follow them on Instagram. So.
Yeah. And do they TikTok. Usually sort of... Is it a cross-section of issues or do they usually
issues do change a bit, but often it's the bus hub. Where's a youth hub? Where can they hang out? Because I didn't realise that the whole of Dunedin seems to have different schools, have different places. Yeah, and I go to my daughter, just go to the youth space in the library.
Mm-mm. No way.
No. So it's about understanding what their issues are and then worried about climate change.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
All of those kind of things. So how do we take that on board when, you know, I haven't worked out the average age of our council, but it's not... 17.
No, sure. Yeah.
More closer to the other spectrum, but that's what we have to think about is how do we make sure that everyone's voices are heard when we're making decisions? Because young people just do not really engage, and we've got to get them young, get them interested, and get them voting.
Yep, 100%. Definitely. Vote. So we can't have this conversation without discussing the fact that you grew up at Lana Castle, Sophie. So random, like it's such a crazy thing. So I understand that the Barker family bought the castle.
Yes, mum and dad were on holiday. Mum was, when they bought the castle, she was about 8 months pregnant. So I was born 6 weeks after they bought the castle.
Bought it. So they were here on holiday.
Yes, yeah.
And they're like, should we buy a castle?
A little bit free and camping.
Right.
Yeah, well, I think that it's quite a long story, I guess, that my granddad was in France. He was at the Battle of the Somme in the First World War and then went to the Sorbonne University. So he, in Paris, and when he came back, he bought a lot of pictures of the heritage buildings and showed them to my mum and instilled this love of heritage buildings in her.
Okay.
So there's North Islander. There she is going on holiday in the South Island, come upon this beautiful heritage building, what was quite run down, and she really saw that opportunity.
And going for a song.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, work from home.
Crazy. And so it's been a lifetime project of refurbishment and
everything.
Yeah.
And mum's still working there full-time at 84. You know, it's a passion project for her. And she was the one really who had the vision to save the place and then to create what is now the top visitor attraction in Dunedin and an icon of the city. So
and
she's
the gardens,
amazing.
I understand, were established by your parents.
Yes, your mum's a gardener, so it's a garden of international significance, and she's well respected throughout all the tree people, plant people in the world for her knowledge and for her creation as well.
That's amazing. So does she still live there?
No. She's moved out. Well, it's challenging because I lived at the castle too, but... No privacy in the ghosts.
Right. Oh, yeah, I was going to ask about the ghosts. Like, is that actually a thing?
Well, I had a few experiences while I was there that scared me because I'd always try to be home, be at the cook, try to be home before 12 or after 1 because of the witching hour.
Right.
You know, that was the time when things were most likely to happen.
So you were still living out there as a student?
Yes, yeah, I slept there.
How did you get home? We won't ask.
Sometimes I made it home, sometimes I didn't.
Yeah.
Depending on the hospitality circumstances. Anywho, so I sleep there till I was sort of about 40-ish on and off, you know, because I had to do duty, which because we had accommodation and stuff. So it was terrible when I was pregnant because my bedroom was on one side of the castle and my bathroom was on the other side. So you know how you have to go to the loo a lot. And I just
in the middle of the night.
Oh, I did not want to go in the middle of the night because it was just scary. So you just hold on.
So I just imagined that all of that stuff was just made up nonsense, but actually.
Well, I've felt a presence that there was no explanation for, heard footsteps, no explanation for. And then, you know, we were there for a long time and you'd hear the same stories happening in the same places. And especially there was a room in the stables that was not anymore, room 15. So your guests would come up the next morning and they go, oh, I felt like someone sat on the bed or something happened. And we go, room 15. We didn't tell anyone because, you know, we just sell the accommodation.
Still trying to get
people in. Stuff happening. And Mum was painting in there when they were doing it up and felt something. And she's a very sensible woman. And then I guess one of the big ones was when there was the play Larnac Castle of Lies. So the premiere was in the ballroom and this was about Larnac and him killing himself and third wife's affair with the second son.
Yes.
Big scandal.
Okay.
So the play starts and then the wind blows in and it blows all the smoke down the chimneys and a lot of noise that you can't see or hear the actors. And then at the climax of the play, Larnac shoots himself. And when he shot himself, there's a bump and this noise and this light. And Mum was like, oh, great special effects. It was thunder and lightning hitting the ballroom at that moment because I was walking along, I was at the play, walking along the top of the veranda and then saw this, saw that happen. And Mum said that all the right brain, which one's the logical brain? She said all those people just could not comprehend what had happened. And yeah, so it was a bit spooky.
It is spooky and crazy. That is very supernatural.
Yeah. So there's things that have happened in various rooms at various times and a bit of a pattern.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so in the end you're like not staying here anymore.
Well, yeah, I think people think it's awfully romantic and it's actually a lot of hard work and cold and scary.
Yeah, cold.
Yeah, cold.
Cold.
Got the chilblains and damp and asthma and eczema.
Oh, yeah.
Miserable.
All of this stuff. But great to visit.
Make
sure you visit.
Yeah, make sure you visit. No ghosts when you visit.
So what were you like as a kid and as a teenager, Sophie? Like,
I had no friends.
No, well, you had all the ghosts.
Well, no, I was, people thought I was strange because I grew up in a castle and then I read a lot. So I was the introvert that could get 10 books out of the library instead of 4. And, a bit challenging, you know, especially when you're a little bit bright and, that's not cool either. And then I was at boarding school for weekly boarded for 5 years as well. So that was a bit challenging.
Where was that, in town?
Yeah, I was at Columba. So,
right,
because we just couldn't – the school buses didn't connect and Mum thought it was better for me because our family was a tad challenged to go to boarding school. So that was pretty hard when you grew up in the countryside with a lot of freedom and then had to adjust to being in a boarding house with 100 and something girls.
Did you say from high school?
Yeah. So I went there in the third form.
I can translate because my kids are in the system, but all my kids
mine was
were
as well.
System,
yeah, I put her in the wrong year.
Yeah, oh, did you?
I thought year 7 was third form.
Oh, that's so funny.
A mess.
Did you turn up? She's like 2 years younger than everyone else.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was actually good to go in form 1 and year seven and make friends at that age.
Yeah,
it was an interesting experience to go to school.
Did she board as
well? Oh, no, I wouldn't. Oh, my God, I was like 12 years old when I went to boarding school. And you look at 12 years old, I'm like, how come my parents have done that?
Yeah.
But it was the right thing for me to do. It was it was hard because I was an introvert. I was like a country girl with no friends and then thrown into this group of girls. It was a tad. I made some great friends, but it was also incredibly challenging. I think you build a good shell around you. And
definitely. And I can understand. I definitely appreciate practically why it is an option for people too. You know, it exists for a reason, I guess. Yeah. So.
Lucky it didn't burn down. Yes. Cigarette smoking and
sly
grogging.
Windows. I imagine there's many, many stories you could tell.
Oh, yes.
And so, single mum all these years, here comes a personal question. I don't imagine you have time for any sort of shenanigans at the moment.
I'm retired.
From dating?
Yes.
Yeah. Retired. Done and dusted.
Yep.
I can relate to that very much.
Well,
so.
I have a wonderful life now.
Yeah, full you know, life. Yeah,
a full life. I don't have any room for anyone else.
Yeah, totally.
So. I have my life the way that I like it.
The show that I just did at Dunedin Fringe was called Dear Stalker, and the premise of the show is to look at essentially, you know, the fact that we prioritise romantic love as being like the only love or the most important love, and how that's not in fact true, and how many other types of love really exist in our lives. And but interestingly as well, I touch in that show about a stalker that I had once, but also I touch on a story about where I was a bit of a stalker myself.
We've all driven past our boyfriend's house.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it. But so I was really pleased to see that you were totally behind this new legislation that's coming out this year, which is, I feel like, one of the single positive things this coalition
government has. Oh, yeah, well, I've got cameras on the house and a panic alarm and all that kind of stuff, because we did have to up the security on my house and around.
Because of a stalker?
Oh, well, because of, well, some horrible behaviour towards me, and then just the female elected members have quite a challenge. So it was great that legislation was brought in. Yeah. But it was also great that there was legislation brought in to allow for councils to put in security systems for elected members.
Coming and going from office or from home?
Oh, at home, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, especially so when I've had my address taken off the electoral roll because you are...
You're at risk.
Oh, well, there was a female mayor in Nelson, Rachel Reese or something like that, who had a home invasion. Horrific. So you have to protect yourself.
Yeah. Mm. Yes. So it's good to see that legislation has come in. And so I understand that as of the 1st of May, stalking is now a criminal offence, punishable with up to 5 years in jail.
And that's part of the challenge is that, you know, when I talked to the police about some stuff that was going on, they're like, oh, you need to keep records. And I'm like, of all of the horrible stuff that's said about you. But to this afternoon, there is a Local Government New Zealand, there's a free service or something that someone can actually look at your social media and manage that stuff for you. Because the thing is that it's having to look at it and having to collect it and give it to the police.
It's traumatic.
It is. It's horrible. And I'm like, I actually don't want to look at it, but you need it as evidence.
You don't want to spend time
doing that. And that's cesspool, no.
And I don't know because I haven't had this particular experience, but my experience of the family court was very much like, keep all the evidence, keep all the records, keep all the track of the domestic abuse and all of the things. Mm. But when it came down to it, I was like, no one's looking. The judge isn't reading through that file of text messages that we sent, you know, like that were exchanged I'm glad I have it all, but I was really like, but who's, no one's pouring through all of this.
And it's traumatic to keep it as well.
I've definitely psychologically did a thing where I did a big dump from my phone and my emails. Like I put it all into a completely separate folder that I keep online because I didn't even want that energy in my phone.
Yeah,
it's definitely a thing. It's nasty, deeply unpleasant. So we're just going to lighten the mood ever so slightly and hear from our sponsors again.
Looking to make your next property move in Dunedin? Call the team that lives and breathes property. At NZ Property Solutions, we're 100% locally owned, packed with worldwide property experience, bold ideas, and serious property market know-how. We're passionate, connected, and yes, we love a good laugh too. Ready for a cracking result? Call the team at NZ Property Solutions today and let's get you moving. 0800 229 655.
Thank you so much to Denise Casey and the team at New Zealand Property Solutions for sponsoring this first season of Tell Me Moya. So excited to collaborate and work with such an exceptional bunch of humans. So I said that we were going to lighten the mood slightly, but I actually lied about that. Sorry. I've turned the page. And the next thing I wanted to talk to you about, Sophie, or ask you about is, I understand that in your early 40s, you had some pretty intense brain surgeries, which may be a lesser known fact about you. I'm not sure. Do people know that? I didn't know that.
About my brain damage. yeah, I did. I'd always had headaches and pains and all that kind of stuff, and you go through the health system, you get x-rays, you get this, you get that. And it wasn't until I got a bit of whiplash and I actually ended up at a really great physio, and she just couldn't touch me because the nerve pain was everywhere. And she said, oh, I think you should go to your doctor and get to go to a gypsy doctor, a GP specialist. So I went and get a CAT scan. So I went and get the CAT scan, and then she looked at it and she said, you need an MRI. Thank God for the physio. And then, you know, the gypsy doctor's like, oh, yeah, it's fine. And then get the scan, and it was pretty bad because I had a great big syrinx, a great big cyst down my spine, and my brain's a bit stuffed.
Right.
Yeah, because my cerebellar tonsils, what it is you're like your cerebellar, sorry, what's that fluid going around? Some fluid that goes around your brain that's supposed to, cerebral
no,
spinal
I feel
fluid.
Like I know the
it's supposed to go round and round and round in your brain, and mine was getting, my cerebellar tonsils were actually pumping it down my spine.
Right.
So I should have been in a wheelchair. So when the gypsy doctor said that he saw it, he just went, oh shit, because
right,
it was so bad.
Yeah.
And lucky for the physio spotting that it was something terrible. So I had my first sort of brain surgery, and it wasn't great because the whole neurosurgery thing was going on, and they had a temp in, a locum in from the States.
Yes, at the time.
Older person doing, and that took 9 hours, and I had a bit of stroke damage from that. And so anyway, that things weren't going well, long time to recover. And then I went to the second neurosurgeon, and she was another locum, and she told me it was bulbinella, it was going up into my brain because I wasn't able really to swallow and stuff. It was,
okay.
I didn't know, it was like really bad.
So this was a consequence of the first surgery?
Yeah, the first surgery, yeah, because it just hadn't worked and had stuffed things up a little bit.
Yeah.
And then the second lady, and I actually knew some nurses then who don't need to touch you. And so luckily Mr. Taha came along, he's still here, and he did the second lot of surgery, and that was fine, and then, but not really, because I was in hospital and I got meningitis, so I was,
I
went home and I was puking and had delirious, so thank God my mother found me, and took me into A&E, so I had a week on IV antibiotics, and
so you caught meningitis in hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Mm, it was pretty bad. It was a disgusting scar and everything going on. And then I knew that things weren't quite right. And, you know, the health system.
Yeah.
I was supposed to have a scan in 3 months and it took 6 months. And I went privately because I'm like, oh, things just aren't right.
Yeah.
And then I got the results and I went on Facebook and I was like, does anyone really know another neurosurgeon? And it's one of my best friends actually went to school with a neuro person, and they gave me the contact of someone in Australia because I, solo parent, one life. And I went over there, and for the same price that it would have cost me to get a scan at Mercy, went across to Australia, got the scan there because I could do like a video scan.
Okay.
And got the appointment with the neuro specialist, like professor, on the same day. And he looked at it, and he's basically, I said, oh, I need 10 years because my daughter was 8. And he's like, nah, you won't get that. So I had to have a third operation. So that was 50
grand.
You won't
get that if you. Don't
I wouldn't get
the operation.
No, I was not. I was, things were going downhill.
Yeah,
And I had a lot of scar tissue. So, like, my brain was kind of sticking to the back of my skull because of all of the scar tissue from the meningitis. Pretty bad. And so I was great. Oh, lucky I'm a good saver. Got the money, went to Australia and had the third operation there.
Oh, my goodness.
And luckily recovered. But there's just a bit of damage there. And I can hear it sometimes in my voice, and I do get rather bad headaches sometimes. But
I was going to ask.
Yeah, it took a long time to come back. So people know that I've had a lot of brain surgery. I'm really open about it because a lot of people are going through a lot of stuff like this and concussion, all that kind of stuff. So I think it's really important for people to know it takes a long time. And sometimes, you know, I'm not the person that I was before, which is frustrating and weird, but, you know.
Well, but you still seem to be able to manage an awful lot, Sophie. Like, I don't know how to do it, especially like all the things, a solo, single mum, solo person in the world. And now if you add to that, there's significant brain trauma that you've experienced. So how long,
So it took years to recover. Absolutely years. And I, you know, it was even just walking because it was just, it was like walking around with an axe in my head for a very long time. Right. Now it's only occasionally a screwdriver in my head because of the nerve damage. But you just have to get on and do things.
So
you know?
It's headaches. Like what would be the things that you notice now? Just the
pain. And it's when I know I overdo it and I have to live with that.
Yeah. And is it the sort of pain that you can pop a couple of Panadol
It's a couple of codeines and gabapentin and a glass of wine. I went to the pain clinic for a long time and he's like, it's fine. Well, I shouldn't say it's fine to mix you wine.
Yeah.
And
if you can
get half an hour pain free, because I did everything to try and deal with the pain. So I know what it's like and I am mentally determined never to go down the pain, you know, the pain spiral that people can get themselves into. So I keep busy and just,
Oh, it's fascinating. When I was, lived in Europe as a young adult, I had a really good friend whose mother had like chronic headaches her whole life and she just wasn't alive. Like she was just in this pain all the time.
Yeah. And it sucks. And it sucks when you are coming back from something like this, when your brain doesn't work. So I do support people who come and talk to me about this kind of stuff because I try to give them hope. I'm like, there is hope. It will. But what the doctors aren't telling you is it takes a very long time to get right.
Yeah. Mm. And so we should be taking these concussions very seriously.
Oh, gosh, yes.
I think we are more now. I think people do take it a bit more seriously now. So in terms of, there's a couple of ways of looking at this, in terms of your legacy. So like what do you, let's look, the first way to look at it would be what would your legacy, what would you want it to be for your daughter? Like what would you want to be, how would you want to be remembered?
By her or for the city or?
For her. And then perhaps we'll ask.
Yeah, I guess for her as a great role model. I mean, she just makes me the loveliest cards and she's such a huge supporter, which is wonderful. Every now and then she gives me a pep talk. Well, we all need them.
Yeah. Oh, and they know stuff. They know stuff.
Oh, they know tech stuff.
They know stuff we don't know.
She taught me TikTok.
Amazing. Great.
Yeah, it's to be a good role model and a good strong role model for her. And try and teach her what I know, you know, and I've always been really keen on getting her a really good education and the networking skills, all that kind of stuff, because my job is to make her a resilient, wonderful human being, and it's especially the resilience piece that, you know, once you're not around anymore, and I had to face that. I had to make a little video if I didn't make it through brain surgery for her. So she's seen all that crap, like she was 7 or 8.
She's been faced with losing mum.
Yeah, yeah, and people, yeah, so that's horrible, really,
yeah,
isn't
definitely.
It? Because she was 5.5 weeks prem as well, so we're in a borderline situation. Yeah, we're into big health crises in my family. So you just to make her resilient and make her proud, I guess, and I think she is.
Yeah. I'm sure she is. Yeah. How could she not be? And so then alternatively, your legacy in terms of being a mayor and how would you like to be remembered?
Yeah, well, I think that again is as a role model and, you know, I would love the word sensible, but sensible, respectful, and then hopefully making some good change in the city and bringing back the positivity for our city, because we have the most amazing city, but we keep tripping over our shoelaces.
Yeah,
you know?
we do have an amazing city.
Yeah, and we don't tell our stories well enough, do we?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Do you feel hopeful, Sophie? Do you feel hopeful for our city? Do you feel hopeful for our planet? Do you feel hopeful for the future?
You've got to have hope. I have immense hope for our city because I know that we've got amazing, wonderful attributes, you know, Harbour City, our heritage buildings, and most of all the people.
Yeah.
You know, it's our connections as a village that are so special and sharing it with other people.
That is a very special part of the city.
It's just
that lovely size where everyone's sort of connected, but you're not in each other's pockets necessarily.
And I love the, you know, I love the coldness of the city as well, because I'm just like, well, you know, we go inside and we think.
Yes.
We're an educated thinking special city. So yes, I have hope for that and hope for a good future. I know that a lot of young people are really struggling, especially with what's going on in the world around them, and it might seem that the efforts, the small efforts that you make have little impact, but I think you've got to have hope and you've got to get out there and try and make the change as well.
Yep, totally. So we are hopeful. You've got to have hope, don't
you?
You've got
to have otherwise,
Totally. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming in. And is there anything that you felt like you wanted to share before you leave today?
I think we're pretty cool, aren't we?
Yeah, we're good. We're good. We've covered a vast array of things. So thank you so much for giving up your time and coming and chatting on Tell Me Moya. You've been listening to Sophie Barker in conversation with Harriet Moya on Tell Me Moya. To follow her journey as mayor or connect with Sophie, you can find her on Instagram and Facebook, but she will block you if you don't say something nice. That's us for today, and we will catch you next time. You've been listening to Tell Me Moya, where the conversations with women are brave, bold, and occasionally make you clutch your pearls in a good way. Heard something that made you gasp, giggle, or immediately text your group chat? Don't worry, we've got you. You can replay this episode or dive into more colourful conversations at oar.org.nz or find us on your favourite podcast platform. For more information about my shows and shenanigans, follow me on Instagram and Facebook, Harriet Moya, Entertainer MC. Thanks so much to Denise Casey and the legends at New Zealand Property Solutions for their tremendous support. Now, go on, hit subscribe. You know you want to.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.